And a very good Monday morning to you. Hopefully you're enjoying the summertime, the summer weather, the pop-up thunderstorms, and all the good stuff we have here in the Midwest with the four-season climate. Adam Lepp here. And this program is called Mid-Morning Coffee Break. Much of the time, I have our official presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, who lives in a place where it's summer most of the year, Boca Raton, Florida. But he is on a very, very brief sabbatical today. So I bring back a very interesting guest that we had on a few weeks ago and also brought him back for an encore. He is an author, a blogger, a presidentologist, a lot like Dr. Feynman, but he lives in a place with a very different climate. Climate different from South Florida, different from the northeastern Midwest, if you want to call that, designate our area as that. He lives in a place where it is kind of mild all year round. They have four seasons, but not to the extreme we have in Ohio. It also kind of rains a lot. And this state is known for several things, bordering the beautiful Canadian province of British Columbia, being in the Pacific time zone, the home of Microsoft and other tech companies, home of presidential hopeful Jay Inslee, which we're going to talk about. And that state is the state of Washington. And the gentleman I'm referring to is Mr. Mike Purdy. We're going to talk about a few things related to presidents in history, but also focus on a book that he just wrote, which has become quite popular. Let me be sure the intern has properly patched everything in, attached the duct tape when needed, and, you know, crossed our fingers. Mike, how are you doing on this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thanks for having me again on your show. I appreciate it. Good to talk with you.
Great to hear an encore of your voice and of your knowledge. And again, we do want to focus on your book. The book is available at finer bookstores near you, but the easiest way to order it, just go ahead and make Jeff Bezos even richer than he already is, because that's okay. He might as well, you know, what Jeff Bezos lacks in hair, he makes up for in money. 101 Presidential Insults, what they really thought about each other and what it means to us. Book about presidential insults. And I do remind folks, this book is rated PG-13. If you think that Donald Trump is the only president who uses language that you don't say in front of a lady, in front of your grandmother, well, maybe my grandmother, she really wouldn't mind, but maybe not in front of very polite company, you'd be sadly mistaken. Now, some presidents like Nixon and Theodore Roosevelt, they weren't known for kind of saying what's on their mind, but pretty much every person who's ever held that office will sometimes let loose a bit and use language, use insults, and you'll find that out in this book. It really is quite fascinating. It's about 78 pages. Won't cost you much more than $11-$12 on Amazon, and it's worth every nickel. It's also gotten some very good reviews, and we do encourage you, if you do purchase the book, go on Amazon and write a review, and almost every review is an A+, and I think for good reason. But before we talk about your book, because Washington State just is the focus of many events, again, two in particular related to your governor right now, I did want to cover those. And we talked about presidential history when you were on previously and talked a little bit about your background. We're going to delve into that also. Now, your governor, Jay Inslee, Mike, hopes to be president, and I think most people would realize he's a very smart man, and I think he'd be a good president, but I don't think his chances are very good. What is the general feeling in your area, Mike? Do people think that he might be president or vice president, or if we do elect a Democrat, have a cabinet position? What's the general feeling in your neck of the woods about Mr. Inslee?
Well, I think you're right that, you know, short of things changing dramatically in how this presidential campaign is starting off, I think Jay Inslee does not have a very good chance of winning the presidency, or probably even winning the vice presidency, being selected for that. I think he definitely could become a cabinet official. I think he is a very strong, intelligent, and very personable man. I've actually met him and had a conversation with him a couple of years ago, and he's very impressive, I think. I think he is up against some very formidable competition in the Democratic primaries, however. And, you know, he has chosen, of course, to make the focal point of his campaign climate change, which I think has some benefits to it in that it makes him stand out from the competition. However, you know, if I were advising Mr. Inslee, I would say that's not a credible way to win the presidency. That the president, as much as we might think that climate change is an important issue, the presidency deals with a lot more than just that. And it's very important that the president have a breadth of knowledge to be able to address all sorts of domestic and international issues. So, Inslee is very likable. He is very smart, very knowledgeable. He comes across well. But again, given the nature and the state of the Democratic race right now, he probably does not have a good chance at all of winning.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would say my assessment is similar. My background, my degrees are in chemistry. I've been a science person all my life. Meteorology has been an interest. It was a possible career choice earlier. And I work with computers. I work with audio processing. So science is all around me, and I'm too old to change that. And there are things I like about Donald Trump. I make no secret of that. But one thing I don't like about the guy, and I find be a serious problem, is he doesn't seem to have any grasp of science, whether it's climate change, whether it's the physical sciences, and whether it's something like information technology, which we'll also talk about. And it'd be nice to have a president who would seem to be at the PhD professor level on a lot of these scientific issues. I certainly think climate change is a serious problem, although I would say Mr. Inslee is a bit obsessed with it. And I mean, there are higher priorities, but I do agree it is important. And I don't think Donald Trump understands it. We've seen the news headlines about Alaska getting temperatures 90 plus, breaking some records. Alaska does get extreme weather, but it seems like that, along with the earthquakes, hurricanes, and over the last couple of years, climate change isn't just warming. It's extremes and changes in how the Earth interacts with its atmosphere. And it seems like Donald Trump doesn't think that this is something that's important. Perhaps Mr. Inslee is on the other extreme, but I'd kind of say err on the side of caution. And being in the Pacific Northwest, he sees it with his own eyes. You know, Olympia, Washington, your capital, I mean, right there on the Pacific Ocean, the biggest ocean in the world, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what we end up really needing as a country, when you think about the complexity of our world, is a president who is able to absorb information and make decisions based on that information, as opposed to based on what their gut might tell you or what, financial interests might lead you toward. I think there's a lot of decisions that are being made today that, which has always been true, of course, in our nation's history, but a lot of decisions being made that are based on financial interest of certain segments of the business world. And I think part of the role of government is to kind of temper some of the excesses and extremes of special interests, whether that's business special interests or other special interests. And so you need a president who can balance all of those things, all of those conflicting interests together, and who can sort through the data and the information and make the best decision possible. And I think you're right that Mr. Trump does not appear to have that capacity. I think many of the candidates running, including Mr. Inslee, clearly do have that capacity.
Yeah, and again, biased opinion because of my scientific background. But it'd be nice to see a president with that cerebral approach. He would be very different from Trump. And that could be good. That could be bad. He may not be as colorful as Trump. And you know, your book is based upon presidents being colorful. Again, making the point, as I've said multiple times, Donald Trump is not the only colorful president. He arguably may be the most colorful, at least in my lifetime, and at least either Trump or Nixon.
I think he's he's the most colorful, not just in your lifetime or my lifetime, but I think in our nation's history. And, you know, we look at these insults that presidents have lobbed against other presidents, and, you know, what it simply reflects is that they're people, you know, and people do this kind of thing. We sometimes try to put the president up on a pedestal and think that they shouldn't, you know, have certain feelings and emotions and have those expressed in words or in speech, but they do.
Yeah, presidents are like any other celebrity. They put on one shoe at a time. And also with Mr. Inslee, I wanted to mention one thing which I really like, and I covered this on my Adam the Computer Guy program, and I tip my hat to the guy. He has pretty much thumbed his nose at Donald Trump's rejection of the importance of net neutrality, something that I think is extremely important with a capital E. And Washington has its own net neutrality law. And just for that alone, again, I would gladly like to see Inslee in office because I do think he would make a difference. And I don't know if he has enough experience in foreign policy or other things needed to be president. Of course, Donald Trump didn't have any experience, but I think Inslee, and I think Mayor Pete is the same way. They may be lacking in that experience, but they're smart enough to pick the right people to help them and just to figure stuff out. We have two presidents with an IQ well over 100 that are running. I think Elizabeth Warren also is very smart, but I would not hesitate to put the IQs of Mr. Inslee and Mr. Buttigieg in the genius level. And as a person who values that, that would... That could be interesting. That's just kind of the way it is with elections and also a difference in ages. I think Jay's about 30 years older than Pete, but in the end, they certainly have a few similarities. On that net neutrality law, Mike, as you would know firsthand, again, living in the land of Microsoft and other tech companies, has that really made a difference? Do you think other states should go ahead and just pass their own laws, or do we really need we obviously need a national law, but how has that net neutrality law in Washington state made an impact?
Well, I think what Washington's net neutrality law has done is simply preserved what was in effect nationwide. And like you said, Governor Inslee has kind of thumbed his nose at the FCC and the turning back of that protection. You know, I think one of the things that demonstrates about Governor Inslee is his courage to take a stand on something that is important. And, you know, we talked about the tempering influence of government on business. And I think this is one of the things that Inslee has done with his support of Washington State's net neutrality law. And so we can look at the smarts of a candidate. We can look at their courage, which I think is an important element of what makes it a good president. We can look at their policy positions, which, while important, aren't everything. I think we also have to look at their style and their ability to collaborate and to get along and to be willing to make hard stands when necessary. And Inslee's stance on net neutrality is certainly one of those examples. And I think that other states would do well in passing similar laws, because we're looking at how do we protect the people, which is really the role of government.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see the government being of the people, by the people, and for the people. I kind of wonder if that's actually the case. So I guess our opinion of your governor is in accord. We think he might be a good president or vice president or high-level cabinet official, but who knows if that might occur. I was kind of joking with my usual guest, Dr. Feynman, in that Mr. Inslee might be a good EPA director, something environmental, or work at at NOAA, the weather place, the Oceanic Administration there as part of the government. So
right.
we'll see. Again, it depends who gets elected, and, you know, and not unexpectedly, this election is getting touchy, getting ugly, but that's all part of the fun of politics. We are speaking with Mr. Mike Purdy, an author, blogger, presidentologist, like the gentleman who's often on with me, Dr. Ron L. Feynman. He's from Washington State, we were talking about his governor who has presidential aspirations. Again, we're not too sure he would even come close to winning, but we do like the guy. We recognize his intelligence and his commitment to science. Mike has written a book that's been doing quite well called 101 Presidential Insults, What They Really Thought About Each Other and What It Means to Us. We will talk about that very shortly. Mike, you were recently interviewed by a young lady who is with the station at the Capitol, because I love state capitals, so I want to mention that the capital city that's just north of you. Of course, you border Canada, but you go a little west and you get to Juneau, Alaska, which is a city only accessible by boat or plane. You can't even drive there. It's kind of like an island. So you were interviewed by a young lady at, I believe, KTOO Radio in Juneau. I listened to that interview. It was interesting. She asked you good questions. Did you enjoy speaking with her?
It was a very fun conversation. It went by all too fast, and it was about 15-minute long conversation. And there's obviously plenty more to talk about. But yes, I agree. She did a very good job focusing on the questions, and it was a very comfortable conversation.
Yeah, it's good to be in a round table of sorts with people from different parts of the country. Yeah, I just love the idea of state capitals and just the quirks. Olympia, Washington, most people probably think Seattle is the capital or maybe Spokane, but Olympia is kind of a small city, actually. I don't think it's much different in population from Juneau, both of which are not even close to being the largest city in the state. But when you have government...
And that's the case with many capitals in the country, that a lot of the capitals end up being smaller cities, you know, Madison, Wisconsin, Carson City, Nevada.
You've got the... It is common out west. Of course, here, Columbus is by far, no other city is even close, the capital and largest city. Indianapolis also, no other cities are even close, even if South Bend, Indiana is currently in the news with Mayor Pete. Indianapolis, just one city to the west, is the largest by far. Tennessee, you know, two states down. Memphis is actually bigger than Nashville, but they're pretty close. Kentucky has a small capital, Frankfort, so it's kind of like Washington. So kind of some quirks of U.S. geography and U.S. demographics. But one thing we do know about Washington is it's, again, the home of net neutrality due to your governor, home of Microsoft, other tech companies. And Eastern Washington is very beautiful with the Cascade Mountains and that beautiful scenery. And you go north, you get to Canada. Always a good place to go. So, Mike, you've written the book we've talked about, 101 Presidential Insults, and it's doing quite well in the sales department. Basically, looks like it could be a joke book, and I guess it could be, but it's actually quotes from our presidents. Pretty much every president is covered, talking about other presidents and presidential hopefuls. And again, it's well known that Theodore Roosevelt, Richard Nixon, among recent presidents, had a bit of a potty mouth, just like our current president. But people who read the book will find out that they're not the only ones. And again, in some ways, this book is kind of rated PG-13. There are some things here you really wouldn't say in polite company.
I like to say that the book is both historical, because it is well documented, and these are real things that the presidents have said about one another, either before, during, or after their terms of office. So it's both historical, but it's also kind of hysterical. I mean, it's really funny to read some of these quotes, to say these were presidents, or maybe they weren't president yet, or maybe they were a former president when they said it. But it kind of takes them down a notch off of their pedestal that we sometimes hold them onto. And but my hope for the book is that it's not simply a fun joke book, but that it is a book that gets us thinking. It gets us thinking about what do we do to create a more civil society where we don't demonize the patriotism or the humanity of other people just because we disagree with them politically. And I hope it's also a book that gives people a small slice of history and helps them to understand some things about our nation's history. And I've done this by providing the context for each of the quotes, when it was said, the context for it, whether the person who said it or wrote it was a candidate or the president or prior to their presidency or afterwards. And so it kind of gives you a little bit of a context, and it helps us learn more about our history, I think. And so it's a good fun book, but it's historical. And it makes us think about how we create a better, more civil society. Yeah. And that's what I try to do.
Yeah, I think we are interested. I've always been interested in the presidents as men, and hopefully someday it'll be a president as a woman. But we talked a lot about some of the recent presidents last time, Nixon, both Fords, Clinton. Of course, some of the presidents from earlier in history. We have Andrew Jackson, who, although he's on the $20 bill, probably is one of the least well-known presidents. And William Henry Harrison was only president for about a month because he caught, I guess, pneumonia or a serious case of the flu because it was cold and raining during his inauguration. So he wasn't president for very long.
And he gave the longest inaugural address in history, too.
Yeah, it seems like his inaugural address was as long as his presidency. Well, Andrew Jackson called William Henry Harrison imbecile chief less than 2 weeks into his presidency, and that was back in March of 1841. And we have James K. Polk about Martin Van Buren, that he is selfish, unpatriotic, and wholly inexcusable. That doesn't sound very nice. So we talked about Theodore Roosevelt, and we think one of my favorite presidents and one of our greatest. Both Roosevelt certainly are in that great or near great category. Talking about John Tyler, and John Tyler, I think you'd agree, Mike, one of our more obscure presidents. But Tyler has been called a mediocre man, but this is unwarranted flattery. He was a politician of monumental littleness. That was kind of mean. These guys certainly.
Yeah, it was kind of mean, especially since Tyler couldn't respond back. And but Roosevelt was very public about that. That quote is included in Roosevelt's book that he wrote on the life of Thomas Hart Benton. And so when we think about John Tyler, I mean, there's certainly some truth, I think, to Roosevelt's statement about calling him a mediocre man, that's unwarranted flattery and all of that. Tyler was not a perfect president by any stretch, but one of the things that we have to thank John Tyler for is establishing the precedent of what happens when a president dies in office. So William Henry Harrison was the first president to die in office, so Tyler was the first vice president to become president. There's a big, big debate going on in 1841 when Tyler becomes president. Is he really president, or is he only acting president? And Tyler made the very strong case, based on the language of the Constitution, that no, he was president. And that was a very important precedent that Tyler established. Now, of course, Tyler later on went on to have some Confederate sympathies, and there's some other weaknesses of the man, but we can thank him for that.
Yeah, I just think of Ford, who was never elected directly. No, I think he was a good president. I mean, he's been underrated. His wife, her legacy as a somewhat interested in fighting the serious drug abuse problem continues to, I think, increase in importance. But not being directly elected, he certainly did ascend to the office in a completely legal way. But Nixon appointed him after Agnew resigned. So sometimes we have these people becoming president and the non-traditional way. We have Trump never having held elected political office. That certainly is unusual. But in the case
of these men did become, many of them became president through these untraditional means. So we've got nine vice presidents who have ascended to the presidency, eight of them because of the death of a president. That's four assassinations and four natural deaths, and of course one resignation, that being of Nixon. And of course a lot of this is, at least the assassinations are covered in Ron Feinman's book on assassinations, which is a very good book.
Yeah, no question. We talk to the finest authors here at the Talking Place, WWGH Radio. I guess, ironically, Mike, even though she would be the first female president. Hillary Clinton had a very long resume versus Donald Trump with no elected political experience. Hillary Clinton being a first lady, being a senator, having a high-level cabinet office, being an attorney. But again, what happens is what the voters have to say, and kind of surprisingly, Hillary is currently not, at least not employed as a public servant like Donald Trump is, but you never quite know. And that's what makes this Democratic field of hopefuls so interesting. We have quite a diverse bunch, and not just in experience, but in age, in race. And we have men, we have women. We shall see what happens, but whatever it does certainly will be full of a few surprises. That's always the way it seems to
be. Exactly. There will be surprises. I mean, I think we're up to 24 Democrats now, although I think one is about ready to drop out. Mike Gravel of Alaska, there are some indications that he's ready to pull out and stop. And he never really got much traction to begin with. And we will see as we continue to go through these debates, the debates coming up later this summer, we will continue to see more winnowing of that field. Fundraising is going to be a big issue as candidates are either able to or unable to raise funds. And so I think a lot of the candidates are in the mix simply because it is a wide open race. And they think, well, whoever wins has a fairly decent shot at winning the presidency. Of course, that's unknown as well, but I think that's why you got so many people in the Democratic primary now.
You are tuned to a mid-morning coffee break with Adam, which is I, and we have our presidentologist from Washington State, Mr. Mike Purdy, discussing just his background, thoughts on the field of presidential hopefuls, and his recent book, which is, again, doing quite well. I strongly recommend that you go on Amazon and purchase it. It's well worth the funds. 101 Presidential Insults, what they really thought about each other and what it means to us. Just some of the quotes from his book, presidents talking about other presidents, often, again, using language or implying things that you may not want to say in polite company. Richard Nixon, one of my favorite presidents, about Franklin Roosevelt. And this, I think, is kind of ironic, Mike, calling Roosevelt a superb manipulator. But, Nixon, he did a lot of manipulating, not just Watergate and, again, not condoning what his cronies would do, but his foreign policy. I mean, it was genius, but foreign policy involves manipulation and making sure A is talking to B properly and things get accomplished. Dr. Feynman and I talked about Trump's visit to Korea being the first time ever and stepping foot in North Korean soil. How does that compare with what Richard Nixon did? And again, there are some parallels, but Nixon and Trump certainly
are
two very different men.
Yeah, and your comment about Nixon calling Roosevelt a superb manipulator, it's so interesting because that's what Nixon was. And a lot of times when we look at the quotes in the book, a lot of them, the person who said it about someone else, that quote could very well apply to the person who said it. So we've got Nixon calling FDR a superb manipulator, Nixon calling John F. Kennedy a barefaced liar. Okay? Many people would say that is true about Nixon. You get Nixon talking about Lyndon Johnson. What did Nixon say about Johnson? He was a calculating bastard. He was a schemer. Johnson was a totally political animal. So is Nixon describing himself or Johnson? I mean, he's talking about Johnson well, but apply to Nixon as well.
The pot calling the kettle black seems to be a common theme in this book, but that's kind of human nature. Of course, we get to recent history. As we all know, Donald Trump says things, and often using language that you don't, you can't say on the radio, so we've kind of tried to clean this up a little bit. Donald Trump about Barack Obama. I mean, we could spend 2 weeks of shows on that, but a couple of quotes you have in your book here. Our very foolish leader. He's the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And then President Obama has been the most ignorant president in our history. His views of the world, as he says, don't jibe, and the world is a mess. He has been a disaster as a president. He will go down as one of the worst presidents in the history of our country. It is a mess. So that's what Donald has to say about Mr. Obama. And we have Bill Clinton about Donald Trump. He doesn't know much. So Bill Clinton certainly being brief, but pretty much to the point. Obviously, Bill Clinton, again, not unlike his wife, had a pretty good resume going into office. Pretty well known, again.
And I think that quote by Clinton about Trump is interesting to look at the context of it. It was a, you know, off-the-cuff comment that he made at a New York bookstore. He was in the bookstore, and he was talking with some of the customers there, and I guess somebody asked him what he thought about Trump, and he said he doesn't know much. And so these comments come at, you know, different times. You know, sometimes they're in private conversations, sometimes they're in letters, diaries, tweets, and so they show up in a lot of different places. And I've, of course, tried to correct the historical record where I can, because there's a lot of these that I found in doing the book. I had these great quotes, but I couldn't include them because I couldn't validate them historically. There's one quote that I ended up, I like to say, I think I fixed the historical record. So this goes back to the founding, and you've got James Madison, who at that point was a former congressman, and he's writing a letter to Thomas Jefferson, and he's writing about current president John Adams, and he talks about the rash measures of our hot-heated executive. But if you go back and you look at James Madison's actual letter, which I've done on microfilm, you see that he says the rash measures of our hot-heated executive, not our hot-headed executive, as many presidential biographies have. Many of them talk about our hot-headed executive, but that's clearly not what Madison wrote to Jefferson about Adams. So tried to correct the historical record where I can in the book, make it accurate, fun, and hopefully thoughtful as well.
I wonder what Donald Trump would think about your book. Maybe we'll try to get a comment from him. I'm sure he would.
I would love to.
I'm sure he wouldn't like the comments about himself, but he might be interested in the fact that other presidents say what's on their mind, just like he does, and that might be an interesting conversation. Mike, we want to talk a little bit about yourself. You have an interesting background, undergraduate and graduate degrees in business from the University of Puget Sound. I guess it's Puget Sound, or I've heard it pronounced both ways.
Uh-huh.
But interestingly also, we kind of talked about this briefly last time, you have a Master of Divinity degree from Fuller Theological Seminary. Were you hoping to be a man of the cloth in your younger years, or how did the Master of Divinity degree come about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I began that degree program with the idea of becoming a minister, becoming a pastor in the church. I was it took me 7 years to get the degree. I was doing it part-time while I was working full-time. And, you know, over the course of those 7 years, I learned a lot about myself. And, you know, ultimately, at the end of that degree program, concluded that really wasn't the place that I saw that God was calling me to. One of the things that I thought about often was that I really wanted to do something that was significant, and I ended up finding out during the time that I was doing the degree program that I was actually doing pastoring work in my job. I was working for government agencies as a manager dealing with contract issues, and found that, you know, the pastoring function, I could do anywhere. That management is really a pastoring function if management is done appropriately, I think. And it would be good, I think, if more managers in business and government and nonprofit sector, if they understood what that really means to be a manager is to care for people and to pastor them. And so ultimately I concluded that that wasn't the right place for me to be a pastor or a minister in a church, but it was a great experience, great learning experience, and helped to shape a lot of my thinking in terms of my vocation.
Was there a particular branch, I assume it was Protestantism, that you had hopes of being a minister?
Yeah, it would have been in a Protestant church. Part of my challenge at that point was also that I did not grow up in the church, so I had no loyalty to any one denomination. And so I had to kind of figure out during that time I was getting the Master of Divinity degree that where would I serve? What church out of the broad range of churches in Protestantism would I serve in? And I ended up doing a couple of pastoral internships as part of my Master of Divinity degree program. I did those in the Evangelical Free Church of America, which I found to be a very good denomination. I currently attend a Presbyterian church. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about my journey there.
I guess, interestingly, we have currently a very Christian vice president, and we kind of question, does Mike Pence understand the separation of church and state? Certainly controversial laws about abortion, gay rights, many things have come to the forefront. Do you think we're kind of moving away from the idea of separation of church and state? Does Mike Pence not understand that concept, or maybe is it being over-dramatized?
Yeah, I think there are some risks there. I think one of the challenges in government and for people of faith is to recognize that while somebody like Mike Pence may have a strong faith, that those who are governing have to realize that they cannot impose their views upon our very pluralistic society, and that the challenge governing is to try to develop policies that are going to be best for the population at large, which might mean it's something in conflict with your own positions of faith. And now certainly your someone's faith positions are going to impact policies. But there's a balance here, I think, that we need to have so that it doesn't become simply a theocracy. It doesn't become a government that is basically run by religious people. Because there's a lot of people in this country who have very different religions, very different faith backgrounds.
Yeah, I think the separation of church and state is...
The country. Precisely. We need to, as a country, be respectful of that. And not simply that if a Christian like Mike Pence gets into power, that this, then he imposes a Christian culture on the entire nation, because that's not where the entire nation is coming from.
Yeah, I put a lot of, I give a lot of respect to politicians who openly say they are religious, especially a certain religion, but they will not let that interfere with their governing. Dr. Feynman and I have talked about Geraldine Ferraro many times, one of my favorite people who ran for president or vice president. She freely said she was Catholic. Because of that, she is not pro-choice, but she wasn't going to take that belief and feel that it had to affect how she would govern, that she respects a person's right to choose. And Mayor Pete, we're seeing a lot of the same thing. And he freely says
exactly.
He certainly is Christian, and it doesn't mean that being gay is wrong or that he is going to feel that everybody has to have similar beliefs, that to each his or her own. And I admire that in Pete. That's one of the things I admire most about the guy, that and his intelligence. And I think we could see a little more of that.
And one of the best definitions, perhaps, of how do we balance faith and politics together. I mean, in 1960, when John F. Kennedy was running for the presidency, there were lots and lots of concerns about his faith as a Catholic. And he was, of course, our first and to date only Catholic president. And back then, there was a lot more bias, perhaps, against Catholics. And so people were raising concerns. And this was an issue that Kennedy had to address in the campaign. And he did so. He gave a speech in Houston to a group of ministers. And he talked about the fact that, you know, he was not going to allow his faith to dictate what the policies would be. Certainly, they're going to influence it. People are people, and you can't help but be influenced by that. But there does need to be, as you talked about, Adam, there needs to be some sense of separation between church and state, between faith and governing. And we need to do that because we are in a pluralistic society, and we need to make sure that those who are governing are governing for the entire people of the nation.
Yeah, I would agree, and that's a very good way to put it. Again, as somebody with a graduate degree in religious studies and someone who's a presidential scholar and author, Mike is, I think, the most qualified person I know to make that statement. Almost out of time, Mike. Thank you so much for being with me again. Another fascinating discussion. Tell us just quickly more about the title of your book and how somebody can purchase it.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, Adam, it's been a delight to be with you again. I enjoyed the conversation. So my book is called 101 Presidential Insults, What They Really Thought About Each Other and What It Means to Us. So it is available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. You can go into your local bookstore and you can order it there as well. And I would encourage you to do it. And if you get it and you like it, I hope you will write a positive review on it on Amazon and or Barnes & Noble. So that's the book. It retails for $11.95. I think that Barnes & Noble and Amazon may have that on a discount now. I'm not sure.
Definitely money well spent. Also, be sure to visit Mike's blog, presidentialhistory.com. Thank you, Mike Purdy, for being with me on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. Have a great rest of your day.